hour three. Three and out. We got one more. Well, you two have one more to go. I got three more hours to go.
You doubling up today?
Doubling up.
How tough is that?
I mean, it's not too bad. I hope not, anyway. I've only done it a few times before, but it's usually not that fun. 865-546-8200. Billy and Will were not willing to go with me in my take. Had somebody tweet me. Let's see. Who was it? VZ So Fresh on Twitter. What if we lose to Vandy in Kentucky but beat Florida and Georgia? Nah. Then you got serious problems. If you can beat those two teams and not beat...
Yeah, I mean, it would feel like 2016.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a fluke. Are we calling 2016 a fluke?
It really upset me that you were coming off a bye and you lose to South Carolina.
Yeah.
What did I hear that Josh Dobbs was sick that game, though? Or injured or something? Like, now has it came out that he was either sick or injured?
The story I always heard was that he had he was up studying all night for some exam.
Oh, that's right.
Exam.
Okay.
Like, all week. So.
Yeah, I'm willing to say 2016. I'm not willing to say it was a fluke because I think that team had a lot of talent. I think the coaching staff were flukes.
I can go there with you. So I asked you before we went to break, you said you needed some time to think. David Ubbin's piece on The Athletic, Tennessee's win total, kind of gives you a what if. 6-6 with Tennessee being competitive in every game. Or you go 8-4 with losses to Alabama, Georgia, Florida, and we'll throw Missouri in there. But they're not close. You get blown out. Which one are you taking, Billy?
So when you say competitive, does that mean, are we going to say within a touchdown?
Well, let's say you keep it within, I think in his article, I think he says by like 17 to Alabama.
That's pretty much a blowout.
I thought so too. We'll say, okay, we'll say, what do you want to say? Two touchdowns?
I say, well, let's say 10 because, what, 2015, you didn't lose a game by more than 10 points. So 6-6, and every game that you lose, you're within 10 points.
Mm-hmm.
Or 8-4, and you lose every game by 21. Would that be, by 21 or more, would that be a good blowout number?
Yeah, sure.
And your losses are Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and Missouri.
Yep. Or if you want to,
I'm going 8-4.
Good.
I'm going 8-4.
I think you made the smart decision. That's where I'm going.
Because you have the 8 wins. You have a chance to win the bowl game. And if you look at the losses, Missouri is the only loss that comes, I guess, later in the season. So you're building some momentum. I think you win 9 games, even getting blown out by 21 points.
Here's my thing. I am done, tired of moral victories. Oh, we only 6-6. Oh, but we kept it close. We kept it close to Georgia and Alabama. We kept it close. I'm tired of the moral victories. Give me 8 wins over 6.
What's a moral victory when you only win 6 games? Like, I think that's okay if you're competitive. Like, I'm okay with that scenario. If if you keep every game within 10 points that you lose and you go 6-6, give me 8-4. I'll take getting blown out a couple games to win 8, to win 8, and it would feel legit, I guess.
And also, yeah, you're getting blown out by Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. Yeah. But those teams are at the top, right? Those teams are at the top. If you go 8-4, you've solidified yourself. You've proven that you have surpassed, or that you are on an equal playing field with South Carolina, with Kentucky, with Vanderbilt. You've passed the teams that right now, that's the complaint, right? When are we going to beat Vanderbilt? When are we going to? You got to beat Kentucky. You've got to get back to that point. And if you go, if you take 8-4, you do that. You get back to beating those teams. It also includes a win over, in this scenario, Mississippi State,
which would be a very, very solid win at that point in the season,
and BYU, which I think is a critical game. I think that's one of the swing games of the season.
Yeah, at this point, if you can guarantee me 8 wins, I don't care how Tennessee gets there. I don't care if Bama beats them 100-0. Truthfully, I really don't. They have 8 wins at the end of the season, have a chance to go to 9 at the bowl game. Like, yeah, sign me up. Where do I sign?
Yeah, I'll take 8-6 any day. 865-546-8200. Let's go to the phones and talk to Drew. Drew, how's it going?
Hey, guys, what's going on? How you doing this morning?
Doing well.
Hey, Ben, you may have more knowledge of this just because I know your history in recruiting, but after that 2015 year when we lost, whatever, we had like, what, 4 or 5 games by a grand total of like 17 or 25 points, whatever that slogan was Butch Jones used the next year, did we not have a better recruiting year after those close losses that year?
Well, Ben has stepped out.
All right. Well, can you guys answer that question? Because I know you're talking about this 8-4, this 6-6. And my thought is, you know, talent across the board now, anybody can get anywhere now. The talent is out there. It's not like it used to be where you had a Peyton Manning or a Jamal Lewis and you were just head and shoulders above everybody because you had this freak human during this time. But now with the training and with the camps and with the nutrition that's out there, I mean, teams are going to get players wherever they're at. Like Kentucky, they had studs last year. Tennessee would have loved to have Benny Snell lined up behind Jared Garantano last year. And so my thought is, I'd much rather go 6-6 and show those recruits, hey, we're just one play away. We're just one step away from beating the Alabama, from beating the Georgia. Those aren't moral victories being close, but if you can show a recruit, we've made strides. Last year we lost by 40. This year we lost by 3. We need that extra defensive push from you or that extra offensive push from you. I'm much more in the 6-6 camp than the 8-4. I don't want to be on the playing field with Kentucky and Missouri and Vanderbilt. I want to be on the playing field with Georgia, Alabama, and Florida. I grew up in the 90s when we had that 13-year winning streak against Alabama, when we were beating those teams on the regular. And so just since the 2000s, it's been misery for me seeing us just hope for 6-6 or 7-5. But for Jeremy Pruitt, he showed us last year he can out-coach, out-scheme, and out-play against a team like Auburn. He did it against the best Kentucky team in their history. I think if we go 6-6, I think it bodes well more in the recruiting by telling a recruit, hey, we were just one play away. You're going to be that X factor. Rather than, hey, we were 3 touchdowns away. Maybe 2 more years from now, with your help, we can get to that point. What are your thoughts?
I see where you're coming from. In my opinion, this is just me personally. I see it more. I see it as a process. I think if you can kind of solidify, you take that step and you prove that you're better on the field than Kentucky, than Vanderbilt, than South Carolina, and then you slowly build toward catching up with Florida, Georgia, and Alabama.
Yeah, in Drew's scenario, the 6-6, you could lose to Vandy for the 4th straight year. I'm trying to throw that out the window.
Yeah, I mean, I guess technically, in David Ubbin's article, it doesn't really give the scenario for 6-6, I don't think, as to who you would lose to. But, I mean, just off the top, so obviously you take off Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Missouri. So throw those four out. And then you pick South Carolina, Mississippi State, BYU. You got to pick two of those, or Kentucky or Vanderbilt. I mean, it's there's no guarantee with 6-6 as to which of the ones you're losing to.
Yeah, I agree. And if in that 6-6 scenario, I would much rather give up a game like BYU and beat the Vandy and give up the Mississippi State game just to say, hey, we were just one step away, because SEC teams are built to beat SEC teams. That's why when we go out of conference, sometimes you win those non-conference games like a BYU or an Oklahoma, and then sometimes you lose them. Because as you see throughout the season, who beats up the teams more? You're built to beat your conference. And so losing to a BYU, well, the ESPN would probably go crazy about how Tennessee's fallen even further. To me, that's not going to matter, because BYU, I don't see every year. I see Alabama. I see Georgia. I see Florida every year. I want to be on that level and kind of forget about those non-conference games. I'm much more of a fan of the nine-conference game schedule, so we can drop these BYUs and these Georgia State games and get more quality football in front of our fans. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
I appreciate the call, Drew. I mean, I get it. In the grand scheme of things, that BYU game doesn't really matter all that much.
But it would suck to lose.
It would suck to lose. And like I said, I think it's a spring game. I think if you can win that, I think your season can kind of – I think that's the first kind of crossroads that you come to. If you win that game, I think it sends you I think it kind of springboards your season. And I think Mississippi State's another one of those games.
Before we get to break, to answer Drew's question for all the listeners, the 2016 football recruiting class was ranked 14th in the nation. That was good for 7th in the SEC. It included 4-star Nigel Warrior, 4-star Jerry Garantano, 4-star Jonathan Kongbo, Tyler Byrd, Marquez Callaway, Daniel Batuli.
Okay, now we're starting to get better.
So some Brandon Johnson. So some guys that are making an impact this year. You can argue how good or how bad that it is, but they are on the field making an impact.
So. Callaway and Batuli were about the only ones that kind of stood out as like
Jerry Garantano.
I mean,
could have a big year.
To Phil's point, so far has not done anything to really make you just go, wow. But hopefully that changes this season. 865-546-8200 if you want to get on. Just like Drew did, like Phil did earlier, join us, give your thoughts on anything that we have talked about today. We'll take a quick break. You're listening to 3 and Out on Fan Run Radio.
The sharpest tool in the shed. She was looking kind of dumb with her finger and her thumb in the shape of an L on her forehead. Well, the years start coming and they don't stop coming. Fed to the rules and I hit the ground running. Didn't make sense not to live for fun.
920. Kicking around, which would you prefer? 6-6 with being competitive to everybody, or 8-4 blowout losses to your rivals, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and throw in Missouri there. You can call in and give us your thoughts on that, 865-546-8200. Take things in a different direction. Article from Business Report. Funes directed $180,000 of stolen money to father of former LSU football player. Here's the story. John Paul Funes, who pleaded guilty today to stealing more than $550,000 from the Our Lady of the Lake Foundation, sent approximately $180,000 of that money to the father of Vidal Alexander, or Vidal, however you say his name, I don't know. The former LSU offensive guard who played for the Tigers from 2012 to 2015 and was a student athlete at the time of the payments. Four sources have confirmed for Daily Report that Alexander's father, James, was the recipient of the $180,000, who is referenced in the court documents only as Individual C. James Alexander is a self-employed entrepreneur who lives in the Atlanta area, according to his LinkedIn and Facebook pages. Multiple attempts to reach him and his son who went on to play in the NFL most recently for the Oakland Raiders, were unsuccessful. Although the Alexanders are not the only LSU-connected family to have received payments from Funes, who pleaded guilty after a 35-minute hearing this morning to one count of money laundering and one count of wire fraud in the six-year embezzlement scheme. Daily Report previously reported the mother and sister of former Tigers quarterback Rohan Davey also received money from Funes, some $107,000 that Funes has said was intended to help cover medical costs for a children's hospital patient. A key distinction, however, is that Davey was not a student athlete at the time of Funes' payment to his family members, who later returned more than half of it to Funes at his request. Alexander was a player for the Tigers during the period when his father received the payments, exposing LSU to potential NCAA rules violations. In a statement, senior associate athletic director Robert Munson says only that LSU was made aware of specific allegations by OLOL, which is the hospital, or Our Lady of the Lake, I think is what officials in late 2018, and made that information immediately available to the NCAA. As this is an ongoing inquiry, LSU will have no further comment.
So he was stealing money.
Yep.
For children in the hospital to pay players.
Yeah, basically. John Paul Funes.
Do we know these patients? Did they ever get the funds that were intended to go to them? Doesn't say.
I'm reading skimming through the rest of the article here.
Alexander was a four-star offensive guard in LSU's 2012 recruiting class, the number 162nd best or highest rated recruit, ninth offensive guard in the nation, and 15th from the state of Georgia. And he received $180,000?
Yeah.
What are these guys receiving in the top 10?
I don't know. I would like to know how much money Zion Williamson got. You know he's getting paid at Duke.
Is it? I mean, I know four-star 162 is a very, very good player, but 180 grand? I don't know. Obviously, the bigger story, the more impactful story is stealing from children in the hospital. Like, what kind of scum do you need to be to think that's the way to pay players to get to LSU?
Over $500,000.
Right. But you know, a different story is 162 highest rated player in the nation is receiving 180 grand to play college football. We all know this is happening. Didn't really know, probably. I mean, you had to think that the really, really good players were making this type of money. But 162, God, it makes you think, like you said, what did Zion make to play for Duke last season?
Yeah. I mean, I would have no idea, but I would venture to say it's more than he got, more than this Alexander kid got. I'd say it'd be pushing a quarter of a million.
Man, $500,000 that he paid out doing this.
And then it goes on. It says though the government charged him with stealing $550,000. Our Lady of the Lake has said the actual amount was more than $800,000.
You know who was a part of the 2011 LSU recruiting class? Odell Beckham Jr.
Ooh.
I'm sure he got a little cash on the side. What? Obviously, this is a problem. Obviously, we know players are getting paid. Should come from different avenues, but what would be your guess to say? What's the stopping point, I guess, for a player getting paid, do you think? I mean, he was 162, a four-star. Do you think all four-stars get some type of, hey, come to LSU, come to Tennessee?
I don't know. I mean, I think they all get a little bit of something, right?
I mean, you would think.
I think they all get a little bit. Some probably get more than others, if I was guessing. I mean,
Does it not make you think, like, Rakim Jarrett's committed to LSU right now? And I know I brought him up, but he's one of the best receivers in the 2020 class. Is he looking at other schools because this came out? And he's like, I don't want to be associated with that.
You're saying that's what he's saying?
Yeah, I'm asking. Like, do you think that he's seen this story and he was like, no.
Maybe. I mean, it's possible. I don't know. I I know y'all talked about this on was it yesterday? Did y'all talk about this yesterday? The California.
Is that gonna be the domino effect for players to get paid, I guess, legally through the NCAA?
I think it's coming regardless. Eventually, it's gonna happen. I mean, if California kind of goes through with this, it's gonna put the NCAA in a weird situation. But I mean, what if it's more than just California? What if some more states hop on? What if Texas decides that they're going to? What if Tennessee or Florida or Ohio? What if these states, Alabama? What if these states all pass legislation? What's the NCAA going to do then? I think their hand would be forced to come up with some kind of new rule to allow players to be compensated.
Yeah, I made the point. What if all the states that hold an SEC school decide that they want to do it? Or is the NCAA just going to keep the SEC out of every single tournament or championship that they can? No way.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know what their proposal would be, but I mean, even if it's just California, I mean, you've got some big time schools in California. You got, I mean, Stanford, Cal, UCLA, USC, and I mean, not to mention all the other. I mean, you got a bunch of small schools in there as well. So, I think that's interesting to me. I think that's kind of the first domino to see how. I mean, obviously, it still has to pass through the California legislature, and then I think it doesn't even take effect until like 2023. So it's on down the line, but still, I think very, very interesting to see how the NCAA will handle that.
This looks horrible for LSU with Will Wade's recent time in the spotlight, right?
Yeah, and which reminds me, the NCAA, there's supposed to be some notice of allegations coming out here probably next week, if not within the next couple of weeks. I think it was, what, six schools? They're supposed to receive notice of allegations as a result of the FBI scandal.
Two big name programs.
So we'll keep our eyes peeled for that. But yeah, as far as how would LSU not be named in this? It'd be laughable if they're not, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that they're the big time program.
No,
that
I wouldn't
would be
either.
Named, but they're part of the six. No doubt,
they have to be. 865-546-8200. A little bit less than 30 minutes left on the show. We'll take a quick break. You're listening to 3 and Out. Switching gears just a little bit. Talking about it during the break, I thought it might be a nice segue here with the NCAA, but then I was like, I don't think he's ever actually been in trouble with the NCAA. Zach Smith had some comments about Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer is the one I'm talking about. I don't think he's ever had any real problems with the NCAA, has he?
Which is crazy, right?
It is crazy to think. He's just had, I mean, he's had his fair share of problems, but oddly enough, none with the NCAA, not that I can think of. But here's the article from Brad Crawford, 247 Sports. Once one of Urban Meyer's closest staffers, disgruntled former Ohio State assistant Zach Smith believes the three-time national champion will come out of retirement in the near future and return to coaching thanks to an elite-level job on the horizon. And not to toot my own horn, I'm sure I'm not the only one that thought this, but whenever he stepped down at Ohio State, I kind of had this in mind. I thought that this could be – I had this same thought process. Fired from Ohio State in July of 2018 after a domestic abuse scandal involving his ex-wife, Zach Smith has defended his alleged actions since to an exhausting extent, now speaks freely about college football behind the curtain in Columbus on his new podcast. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he said, I probably know someone who either cuts your grass, works with the guy who cuts your grass, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, someone that I know that works in the United States Postal Service dropped a bomb on me last week. He tells me that Urban Meyer's house has had certified mail sent to and from the University of Southern California. I'm talking several letters. I don't know that he has communicated with them, and it's I don't know that he has communicated with them, and it's a decent source. I would put $1,000 that he would be the head coach at USC in the near future. And like I said, I kind of thought this whenever he was fired at Ohio State, Clay Helton's not on the firmest of footing out there at USC. That's a program that has kind of been on shaky footing ever since Pete Carroll left, which doesn't feel like it's been that long ago, but it's been, what, about 10 years?
Yeah.
2010.
Right.
Would have been when Lane Kiffin left to go back out to USC, so... Look, that's a program that, kind of like Alabama when they hired Nick Saban, they're tired of mediocrity. They're ready to get back. I could see it happening.
This doesn't surprise me at all. I guess what surprises me is there's a team that wants to take a chance on Urban Meyer again. I know he's a great, great coach when it comes to records. Do you want him walking? Let's say you had a son, big time recruit. Are you excited about Urban Meyer coming and sitting in your living room, sharing some sweet tea and lemonade, talking to your son about how he's going to, you know, mold him in to this great man? And sure, he could get him to the next level, but does the character aspect of Urban Meyer play any part into affecting USC's recruiting?
No, probably not. It doesn't. I mean, if you're a father or a parent or of a student athlete, you're probably not feeling too great about Urban Meyer's track record. But, and I don't know if I'd take him. I'd have to think about it. I know that's probably bad of me. I just want to win football games.
Speaking of winning, he's only won less than 9 games one time in his career.
Was that his last year at Florida?
Okay, twice. Sorry, yeah, last year at Florida and his first year in 2001 at Bowling Green. At Ohio State, he won 10 games every single year.
I mean, they
at least 10 games.
They went undefeated his first year there, right?
12-0.
Yeah. I mean, the guy can coach football. Is he a scumbag? No doubt.
So, all right, let's take we got a couple minutes here before we have to hit a break. Let's take USC out of the equation here. Let's say Jeremy Pruitt has a 5-7 year 2 and a 6-6 year 3.
Don't put this on me, Billy. Don't put this on me.
Let's say Pruitt gets fired.
Don't put this on me, Billy.
You're putting Urban Meyer at the top of your list?
I don't know if I'd put him at the top, but you got to give him a call, right?
No, I don't. I don't give him a call. I don't think.
I mean, I guess, not wanting to look like a hypocrite for the Shiano stuff, I guess you really can't hire him.
That would be very interesting to see.
And as Tennessee fans, the sports media would absolutely blast us.
Oh, no doubt.
If we pulled that. And they would be justified in doing so, in my opinion. Because their thing was, oh, you're just doing this because he's not a good football coach, because he did this and he did that, not because of the Penn State stuff. And if we went out and hired Urban Meyer, they would be exactly right. Because Urban Meyer is a scumbag as a human being. There's no question about that. So, I think he's untouchable, at least for us.
So, you think it's just a unique situation with Tennessee and USC should?
Well, I mean,
I don't think
that we're the only one. And what, I mean, that's on them. That's on USC. That's on USC fans, how they feel about it. Are they win at all costers? I don't know. And it'd be a little different because you're in Los Angeles. You got the Lakers. You got the Dodgers. You're kind of on down the list. You're not the center of attention like you would be here in Knoxville or in Columbus, Ohio. Me personally, I would kind of like to see him take the USC job. I think he's good for college football. Now, in a sense that. Now, I'm not saying he's good. I mean, like I said, he is a scumbag. I mean, he had a murderer on his team when he was at Florida. I'm not saying that he's a good person. But I do think he is good for college football. I think he plays the villain perfectly. Especially for, the guy's been at Florida, Ohio State, and now potentially USC. He would play the villain perfectly at USC.
Do we believe Zach Smith, or is he kind of a...
I don't know.
Is he kind of a attention grabber?
I think he is an attention grabber. I don't know if what he's saying is true or not.
He does bring up a good point later in that article. With everything that happened at Florida when he retired, resigned, or whatever you want to call it, I was coaching at Temple when everything at Ohio State started happening, Smith said. I've known Urban for 20 years, and people always ask me, do you think he's going to coach again? I was adamant in saying no. I sat in the staff room at Temple in a casual conversation and told everyone I was absolutely sure that he was not going to coach again. Sure enough, a week later, I'm employed by him at Ohio State. Nothing would surprise me with Urban Meyer. I just don't think you do it. If I'm making the decision, I don't even call the guy.
And then, I mean, you got what Urban said. He, quote, I learned my lesson long ago. All I'm going to say is I believe I'm done coaching. I think I'm done. He's not done. He's not done. He wants it. He wants to come back. You know he does. How old is Urban? He's still got plenty of coaching left in him.
54 years old.
Oh, yeah. You're telling me he's got a good 10 years left.
You're probably right. He's probably back. I just wouldn't do it.
I mean, that's on USC or any other program that wants to make that decision. I don't know. That would be on them. I and like I said, I think for Tennessee fans, I think for Tennessee, I think he's untouchable. Unless you just want to go through that media firestorm, and believe me, it would be a firestorm. It would be, if you thought the Shiano stuff was bad and the media backlash there was bad, go out and hire Urban Meyer if that situation were to arise. Play that hypothetical in your mind. It would not be pretty. 865-546-8200. We're on the home stretch. Final segment of Three and Out coming up right after this. Final segment of Three and Out on your Wednesday.
Went by too quick.
It did go by fast.
I've enjoyed our time.
I have too. It's been a fun show today. Jam-packed. So what we got this last segment, Billy?
Well,
I'll let you set it up.
Last Friday.
For young Will.
Last Friday, intern Will came in with his top five in the NBA draft, the grades of their suits. It was a pretty good list. Then we had a segment to get to know old intern Will. Did we do a list? Have we done another list?
I believe we did one Monday.
Oh, on things we hate to wait for?
Yeah,
things we hate to wait for.
What was on that list?
He got in trouble for that one, so I hope he's learned his lesson. I brought up waiting for Christmas morning is the easiest A-plus there is on things you have to wait for. No matter what age, it sucks to wait for Christmas morning.
Yeah, it does.
Will gave it an A-. His dad heard, now I don't know if he's going to have anything under the tree.
Ooh.
Christmas morning.
Ooh.
So I hope you learned your lesson. But now we're back with Will's worst one-hit wonders list.
I have the 07 Browns, who went 10-6, and they were second in their division. Didn't make the playoffs, but they had their expected win loss was an 8-5 to 8.5 or 7.5, and they went 10-6. And then the next season did not do anything, and then they were the Browns we all knew and love. "Take on Me" was a great song, but a one-hit wonder. And then I have Timmy Smith, because his rookie season. He had the most rushing yards in one game in Super Bowl history, which was 204, but then the next season only ran for 470, and then the season after that played one game with the Cowboys before he never played another game in the NFL. Jeremy Lin, for obvious reasons, he had that one breakout season with the Knicks.
Linsanity.
And he was on the Raptors this year, so he's an NBA champion, so you can't really call him a one-hit wonder per se, but he had that one great season and hasn't really done that much. And then my last but not least is the XFL for one-hit wonder.
Okay.
And that's my list one-hit wonders in sports and regular history.
I thought we were going all music. I was a little thrown off. I'll be completely honest. I thought we were going music.
I told him fair game. However.
Take on Me. That was a good one.
I'm not sold on the Jeremy Lin one-hit wonder.
Oh, no, Billy.
I'm not sold.
Oh, Billy. What do you got?
In New York was not even It was one of his best seasons. He scored 14.6 points a game, 13.4, 12.5. He had another year, 14.5. My man Jeremy Lin is surprisingly a good role player in the NBA. Now, he's 30 now, so maybe not so much now.
He's 30?
He's 30. Yeah, that's surprising, right?
How long ago has it been since Lin's sanity?
He like played five in or six? He played in New York in 2011.
Cool. It's been that long?
That's yeah.
Will was not even double digits.
I was in like fourth grade and I had just started getting into sports and I was so confused why he had one great season and I never saw his face on TV.
Okay.
Again.
He started in 82 games the year after for the Houston Rockets and scored 13.4 points a game while averaging 6 assists per game. That's pretty good.
Will sheeping it up Billy sheeping it up for Jeremy Lin.
Wow. What else did you have?
Wow.
The XFL, Take on Me, Tommy Smith, and the 07 Browns.
We're about to see if the XFL is a one-hit wonder.
Is that what, next offseason that they do their thing?
They're trying to come back, yeah.
Yeah, I knew they were coming back. I couldn't remember if it was this, like, it's 2020, right? Or not. I couldn't remember if it was 2020 or 2021.
Brandon, I'm going to put you on the spot real quick. One-hit wonder.
Jump Around. The one that Will brought us
what?
Back with. Yeah.
What?
Come On, Eileen. It's another good one.
Oh, that is a good one.
That's a great one.
That's a really good song, though. Man, I really love that song.
Billy loves Come On, Eileen.
I would listen to it every day.
It's a banger.
What about Tootsie Row? Mambo number 5.
Oh, yeah. That's another good one. That's going to do it for us today on 3 and Out. For intern Will, for Billy Williford, I'm Brandon Oreck. Stay tuned for the Blitz coming up next.